You're a better man than I am.
Or woman. Rereading here verses 9 and 10. Now Paul is continuing to explain the problems that flow out. And again, don't lose sight of the overall context. The problems that flow out of false doctrine. The kinds of things that these people get into. And the dangers associated with their false doctrine. But those who want to get rich, those who have set their mind on getting rich, and this is their goal, are falling into temptation. I mean, it's a present indicative. They're in the process of falling. They just may or may not know it. And a snare and many foolish and harmful desires, which plunge men into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is a root of all sorts of evil. And some, by longing for it, have wandered away from the faith and have pierced themselves through with many a pang, many a sorrow is even a good thing there. Point one here now, Paul continues his thoughts on the subject of money and the details of life as he contrasts the adjusted believer who is characterized by his contentment with believers that are not content with what God has provided. To the articular present participle of boulomai, which is the subject of this section, denotes those types of believers that have an ongoing desire for money in the details of life. Three, the verb is to be distinguished from thelo, to wish or want, in that it denotes a course of action that has been considered in the thinking processes, and for which plans have been made. Again, we would distinguish, I would say, between, you know, you want something and you lust after it and you lunge right away, as opposed to you want something and you've thought about it and you adopt a course of action in order to get it. Those are kind of different ways of going about it. One implies a much more reasoned approach to it, where the other one implies, you know, probably just more of a lunging approach. For the use of the participle indicates that this is not some brief lapse of judgment. All of us could fall into, you know, it happened to me yesterday. You could fall into, you see something, I want it. And I'm going to get it. No, okay, well, then that's when your doctrine better kick in and your good spiritual senses, and you step back and you say, oh, you know, I don't need that. So the idea here is that it's not just a brief lapse of judgment in a moment of passion or emotion, which could happen to any of us. This denotes an ongoing determination to make the pursuit of money and the details a priority. And we know the types of people that have made these things priorities in their lives. And it's clear that they've made them priorities, and it's hurt them. It's dragged them down into, here we see bad associations, evil suspicions, all these other things, and all these evils that can come out of people that want to compromise just in order to get money or get ahead in life. So five, although some interpreters seek to limit these comments to the covetous poor, the majority recognize that this sin can be committed by anyone, regardless of his degree of material prosperity. Some look at this and say those who want to get rich implies that they aren't rich, but it doesn't necessarily. They have this as an ongoing desire. Now, they may have achieved some level of material prosperity already, and certainly this doesn't rule out the covetous poor. They could fall into this just as well. So the majority recognizes this sin can be committed by anyone, regardless of his degree of material prosperity. Six, there are some people that are simply consumed with the idea of obtaining wealth, or more wealth in some cases. This would include those that don't have it and those that have some measure of it. Seven, the complementary infinitive pluteo, to get rich, is defined as one who enjoys a relatively high scale of opulence, one that has an abundance beyond the norm. And while believers don't like to admit it, the fact is, compared to very much of the world, we're all rich. Compared to very much of the world out there at large, the average American, the American living below poverty level does better than you would do in many, many countries. So, but by the standard of America, obviously, if you're at the poverty level, you're not rich by any stretch. And so rich is a relative term. But conveniently, a lot of people apply rich to anybody that has more than they have. They never want to see themselves as rich. Why? Because if you see yourself as rich, all these verses come into play now. For instance, you look ahead in verse 17, instruct those who are rich in this present world, not to be conceited. Well, okay, well, I'm not rich, so that doesn't apply to me. Well, yeah, but you might be rich. And that's why for people to conveniently define these terms as more than what they have doesn't necessarily work. So again, this is one who has an abundance beyond the norm. Eight, this is a regular area of mental attitude sitting that is actually promoted by the culture of Babylon. Believers must closely monitor their attitude toward the pursuit of material prosperity. And if you don't have this thing right, it can do you in, and we are exposed to it. We are immersed in it all day, every day. And so you have to just monitor. Okay, you know, and ask yourself. And one thing to do, you know, and it's never wrong, you know, you have to learn as a believer when to trust your instincts, when to be led, know you're being led by the Spirit, and when you're not. And if I have any doubts, I usually just put it on hold. I'll just put it on hold for a week and see how I feel a week later. Now, like I might, a week from yesterday, which would be next Saturday, I'll probably look at the TV and think, well, I'm glad I didn't buy those things. But, you know, then again, I might say, you know, you're an idiot. Go get one. So it's hard to know. But if you have a doubt, put it on hold. It's not going to go anywhere. Shoot, given electronics, the price may come down in a week. So you never know. But you pray about it. You think about it. I've made snap financial decisions that involve tens of thousands of dollars. You know, when you go out to purchase a car, you know, I've made a decision one day to go out and had a new car by the end of the day. And God blessed me in it. So, but I prayed about it. I didn't just make a snap decision and not pray about it. I mean, I prayed about it, was led by God and all of that, and had some idea of what I wanted, but was, you know, you have to be flexible and let God provide what he wants. Like the car I have now. I didn't exactly get the color I wanted, but I got such a good deal on it that the color became irrelevant. It could have been, well, no, there were some colors I would not have bought. I've seen cars I would not drive. But that became irrelevant at that point. So I go out and God blesses me and okay, there it is, fine. And he does that. So again, if you're walking in fellowship, You learn when to trust your instincts and when not to, and you pray about it. And if you have a doubt, just put it on hold for a week. It won't go anywhere. So again, this is promoted in Babylon. We're immersed in it. It's all over the place. The commercials are geared to stir up materialism lust in many cases. So nine, if they do not monitor this, people easily succumb to the idea that they should have more and more, the highest and the best at all times. 10 warning signs of material lust include A, pursuing more work in order to earn more money or purchase more details. Now, there's nothing wrong with having a second job or taking other work and all of that. We're not against that. The Bible is for diligent application in that area. But the motivation becomes the issue. Why are you doing it? Well, I'm taking another job because I've got bills to pay and I can't live on my present income. Fine. God is all for that. And you try to get a job, obviously, that wouldn't conflict with Bible class. And we've made allowances in the past, and we recognize that from time to time, anybody's job could conflict with Bible class, occasionally. But there are some people that it became a habit that it conflicted with Bible class, and it wasn't dealt with. And I'm going to take a much firmer line towards this in the future, that if you start missing Bible class regularly because of a job, that could become a weed in your life that needs to be pulled. And we all know what weeds are. So the idea here is, why are you doing it? And if they are actively doing this, okay, I'm taking another job because I want something. Is that legit? I've looked at options of taking more work or all of this, and every time I've thought through this in my niche, I've said no because it complicates my niche. Don't complicate your niche. That is a fundamental rule of doctrine. Keep it simple, stupid. And that is an acronym that we all know. So B, this is I don't think you're stupid, but I just explain myself. B, this is especially dangerous if one rationalizes against the necessity of being in Bible class or applying doctrine in order to make more money, in order to have more. I've seen believers that it would sacrifice spiritually for years, did the right thing, had their priorities straight. Then they determined, I've got to get something, a house, a car, whatever it was. And they changed their priorities, and I saw their spiritual life go down the tubes with it in some ways. Now, they may not have crashed and burned right then, but I saw a certain amount of contentment go out of their lives. I saw a certain amount of blessing go out of their lives, and I saw a lot of misery come in to replace it. And that is not the end of the equation you want to be on. See, lack of contentment with what God has provided. This manifests itself in the attitude of constantly wanting more. Or complaining about what you have. Why would you complain about God's provision? What is wrong? That manifests a lack of gratefulness and all of that. And I've got to have more. I've watched people. I've seen it. They'll buy some detail and they'll upgrade it endlessly. Or their house, upgrading it endlessly. There's no end to this stuff. I mean, what all do you need to do? And we're not talking about legitimate things you have to do. I was talking to Rich the other day. I feel like I'm about with him. Let's sell the house and get a condo. Maintenance free. That has some real advantages in life for simplifying your niche. You don't have to paint. You don't have to pressure wash. You don't have to repair stuff. So, but again, what have believers been sold? They've been sold a bill of goods that if you aren't buying, you're losing somehow. And believers have bought into this. And it's just not true. We rented for the first 7 years. Four years, I guess, we were down here. We rented and we didn't even consider doing anything else. But God blessed us with a good deal here. And we could afford it. And the guy made us a lease purchase deal that was actually good and beneficial. So we went from paying $700 a month rent to buying, and our house payment was $488. I hate to mention numbers because people get paranoid, apparently, when I mention numbers. Numbers aren't evil. So mathematicians use them all the time. So we simplified our niche by buying. We didn't make it more complicated financially in that regard. So again, but still, the goal was to simplify, to make things easier, to live on less. That was what we were striving to do. And now I've come to the conclusion, he has figured me out. He knows I'm willing to live on less. So now, over the last few years, how many ever, I don't know, he's been blessing me with more. Well, that's nice. I like that. But you can't let it go to your head. You can't lose your focus. You can't lose sight of, okay, so I got more. So what? How does my bank account impact me in the study? It doesn't. I don't go back to the study and say, oh, I'm able to study today because I got $5,000. Or I can't study today because I don't have enough money. Money doesn't impact these things. D, a thought process that is fascinated with things, which often manifests itself in speech that is constantly focusing on the details and the latest acquisition. And all you have to do is sit around and listen to people. There's nothing wrong with getting something. There's nothing wrong with talking about a blessing. But I'm talking about people that I've met that this is the focus of their life. This is all they talk about. This is where they live. E, constantly looking for the next bargain, the next good deal, the next way to acquire some detail of life, which is promoted in magazines, on TV, radio, or some other media. So, again, what we're dealing with here is the proper attitude about this with doctrine. It's not wrong to have things. It's not wrong to be blessed. I would say, given all things equally, I'd rather be blessed than not. But also recognize, again, the principle that the Proverbs said, and I believe it was in the Proverbs, and that is, don't give me too much or don't give me too little. Give me what is my lot in life and help me to be comfortable with it. And pray about that, and God will do it. I've seen him do it in my life. I believe doctrine works in this area. I believe doctrine works in every area, but in this one. 11, in the parable of the soils, Jesus Christ made it plain that some believers will eventually become spiritual casualties, because they placed the details above the truth, Mark 4:18 and 19. And they may not admit this to you, but it's just as true as whether they admit it or not. And these are the ones on whom seed was sown among the thorns. These are the ones who have heard the word, and the worries of the world, the deceitfulness of riches, and the desires for other things enter in and choke the word, and it becomes unfruitful. And so their divine good production suffers. I've seen believers, they're so immersed and getting ahead and making a living and all of that, that when other believers need help, and I don't just mean financial help, but I mean they need to be there to help them, they're nowhere to be found. Why? Because they're consumed with this business of getting ahead. So this will do you in. This has done some people in. They seek to have love, that is, to maintain loyalty to two masters. And as Jesus said, no man can serve two masters. You can't follow two drummers. 12, the result of failing to monitor and control this area of the lust grid is that the believer falls into a number of spiritual traps. 13, however, because this sin is so pervasive in our culture, so encouraged by our media, and so often pursued by believers, many fail to see that this sin is not just as detestable as any other STA activity, but often far more dangerous because it is viewed by so many believers as being acceptable. And people are shocked, of course, by the big sins. Murder, rape, adultery, drunkenness, all these things. Committing crimes out there, drug dealing, these sorts of things. I mean, believers would be shocked if they heard what some believers have done. And they'd be appalled, and they wouldn't be able to deal with it. And yet these are some of the same believers that are engaging in this detestable activity and don't acknowledge it and don't change it. And for some of us who avoid this, I find this very distasteful. I find it very distasteful to see believers living like this. And so once again, thankfully, I'm preaching to the choir. That's good. That's good because that stuff has eaten some people up, and it'll do them in. Ultimately, there's a number of sins it'll do you in, but this is certainly one of them. So again, but it's so pervasive out there. It's so encouraged. It's looked upon as normal when in fact it is still quite sinful and quite dangerous. 14, the Greek verb empepto is used extensively in the Septuagint and literally means to fall into a physical thing like a pit. Of course, the Septuagint is the Greek translation of the Hebrew Old Testament. And it's called the 70 there because theoretically there were 70 scholars involved in it. And it was translated, the Hebrew text was translated into Greek. I believe it was in Egypt. And Genesis 14:10 is one of the ways where it's used in a literal sense. Now, the Valley of Siddim was full of tar pits, and the kings of Sodom and Gomorrah fled, and they fell into them. It uses empipto there to translate that term. But those who were left fled to the hill country. It's also used in Psalm 56:7. There, clearly it's used of falling into a physical thing like a tar pit, which doesn't sound like a pleasant way to go. Psalm 56:7, as means of dying are. Because of wickedness, cast them forth. In anger, put down, or to cast down, that's the thing there. Cast down the peoples, O God. And these imprecatory prayers, as they are called, are not actually believers praying against other people, as much as they are believers praying for God to intervene on their behalf and to take their case up for them. So they're not malicious, as some people have said they are. They are simply prayers of righteousness, asking God to deal with the situation for them. Which, of course, we should be offering up big time right now. Matthew 12:11. And here, obviously, this is not in the Septuagint. This is the actual Greek. Here, for a physical fall. What man shall there be among you who shall have one sheep? And if it falls into a pit on the Sabbath, will he not take hold of it and lift it out? Falls into a pit is there the physical fall of it. 15, it is used in a figurative sense to denote one that falls from a higher or more desirable position to a lower or less desirable condition or experience, as in Luke 10:36. Here, of a falling, used of falling into, obviously, of a situation in which one is free and going through life, and then he comes at the mercy of these robbers. Which of these three do you think proved to be a neighbor to the man who fell into the robber's hands? And this is in, of course, the parable of the Good Samaritan, the background of which is that the Samaritans were the hated and despised half-breeds of somewhat northern Israel. And so they were looked on down on disdain as being less than worthy by full-blooded racial Jews. But Jesus uses this to point out these people you think are so unworthy. Which is the best application here? Who made the right application? And he contrasts them with a certain priest and a Levite. They're the representatives of righteousness, and they won't help this guy. But the poor, god-awful, hated Samaritan, now he would. So which one, again, do you think proved to be a neighbor? Well, the one that had mercy on him. And 1 Timothy 3:6, we saw it in the requirements there for the pastor teacher. As a part of his godliness code. And here, and why you don't put a new convert into an office like this, lest he become conceited and fall into condemnation, the condemnation incurred by the devil. Again, the condemnation that Satan fell from a higher, more desirable place into a position that was far less, just as an arrogant pastor would. And that's the danger, of course, that we have to keep before us. So 16, although the verb fall may seem somewhat passive, they fell, they could not help it. It is the direct result of their choices to seek wealth. 17, therefore they bear the blame for their own spiritual regression. It is not the fault of outside forces, either the demons or the cosmos. Now I'm not saying that the demons and the cosmos may not have worked on them, but the choice here was theirs. Those who have made a desire, made it their desire to get rich, and make this their ongoing way of life. Sure, does the cosmos influence them? Probably. But they ultimately bear the brunt of this and the fault for it. 18, further, the fact that Paul uses a present indicative is designed to indicate that the greedy person is continually falling into a temptation and a snare because of their ongoing desire to have more. 19, believers that are infatuated with the pursuit of wealth and the details of life first fall into temptation. 20, the Greek term pyrosmos is actually used in two distinct ways in the New Testament. The first is somewhat neutral and focuses on the attempt to learn about the character of something or someone by testing or trying it. James 1:2 is where it's used in that fashion, in a neutral, more neutral sense, we might say. Again, the translation here kind of is misleading. It's literally consider every joy. Not that you think it's all joyful, but that when you fall, my brethren, when you encounter various trials. And there it's translated as trials. The command here is to focus on the positive aspects of the Christian way of life when you fall into these things that would take your joy, that would do you in that sense. Focus on the joys of the Christian life, the blessings of God and all those things, and not get completely wrapped around the axle about the current round of testing you're under, and to put that aside at some level and to move on and to grow on and all that, and just focus on the good things. And what are the good things of the Christian life? Well, there's a lot of joys associated with the positive believer's life. The joy of knowing God, just that would almost be enough. But then he provides blessings in time. He provides fellowship with positive believers and all of that. Those are things you can focus on. And also verse 12, blessed is the man who perseveres under a trial. For once he has been approved, he will receive the crown of life, which the Lord has promised for those who love him. 21, the second manner in which it is used, as it is here, is the attempt to make one do wrong, to tempt or entice a person to sin, as, say, Luke 4:13 uses it. Here, the active temptation or solicitation to do evil, to do wrong. And where do these temptations and solicitations come from to do wrong? Well, we certainly know that the spiritual forces arrayed against us, whom we do not see, are constantly working out there to undermine the truth and to drag believers down. We also know that certain of these lusts come from our own lust grid, from the sin nature itself, these temptations to do wrong. Every man is tempted when he is drawn away, enticed by his own lust. That temptation, and so these things work against us. The cosmos, the organized system out there, is designed to tempt you away from doctrine at some level. That's as a reflection of Satan's perverted genius and all that we know, and his evil. So when the devil had finished every temptation, he departed from him until an opportune time. And the three direct temptations, of course, were designed here to attack the God-man, to get him to function independently of the Father, which would have been a violation of the kenosis doctrine, that what he agreed to in his pre-incarnate state was to become man and to obey the Father at all points in his life. And he found this to be a joy. He said his yoke was easy and his burden was light because he just obeyed God. So if the believer is really positive and really obeying God, the Christian life shouldn't be this horrible burden that some people seem to act like it is. It should be, in some ways, relatively easy, even when you're in the midst of some hellacious testing. So 22, this type of believer actually does to himself what he is commanded to pray to God not do to him. Matthew 6:13, he exposes himself to these temptations. And what are we told to pray in the model prayer? That God not expose us to these temptations. So the believer actually goes out and undermines his own life that falls into this. And do not lead us into temptation. That is, do not put us in a position or a situation that would spiritually do us in. Not that we would never be tempted. But that, and the arrogant believer might go through life and might assume, well, I could handle anything. Well, don't assume that. That's the first. That will get you into trouble. God could put you in a situation that could do you in just like that. And we're to pray that he doesn't do that, that he watch over us in terms of protection so that we do not be exposed to these things that could permanently, that we fall and permanently never recover. We don't want to fall at all, but a fall from which you don't recover is even worse. So 23, we are to pray for God's logistical support and leading ministry so that we are not exposed to some sin or situation that might permanently neutralize us. And yet these believers go out and involve themselves in things that neutralize them. And that's the stupidity of all of this. And so the Christian way of life, again, is you walk by faith, not by sight. Well, where's the path go? I don't know. I'm walking by faith. I can't see the path with the eyes of physical eyes of life. And so you have to be under the filling of God, the Holy Spirit, or in fellowship, and be praying about it, be led by the Spirit, and he'll lead you each step of the way and make your path straight if you desire for that. And this is what you long for. So 24, now that Paul has made it explicitly clear that the desire for wealth and the details can result in significant danger, believers should acknowledge the dangers that are inherent in materialism. And again, many people just don't see there's a danger here. They just don't see the problem with it. Or is it that they just don't want to see the problem with it? More likely. 25, temptations that may accompany greed and material lust include lying, cheating, extortion, embezzling, and using or shortchanging others to satisfy your lust for more. But people like this don't have any problem using other people. They don't have any problem with taking advantage of people. They don't have any problem lying about things at a certain level to get ahead. And these types of sins come out of this desire to have more. 25, temptations that may accompany greed. I just read that one. 26, the second thing into which Paul says this type of believer will fall is a snare. 27, the Greek noun pagus is used of a device that was designed to catch animals, a snare or trap. 28, it is used in a figurative sense, as here, to denote one that to denote that which causes one to be suddenly endangered, that which brings one under the control of a dangerous or hostile force. We saw it there again in the commands to the pastor or those that aspire to the office. He must have a good reputation with those outside the church so that he may not fall into reproach and the snare of the devil. That the devil actively would seek to undermine anybody that aspires to this high office, and he becomes a particular target in the angelic conflict. And that just goes with the territory. And so you have to be circumspect with regard to those outside. You go to your work. You do your job right. If you had to call your boss, he could testify, yeah, this guy does his job right. He's fine. The people with whom you associate at the bank, you're not constantly bouncing checks. The people you associate with outside of that, where you are in social settings or that, your neighbors, that they could say, no, he's a good guy. Now, they may not like the doctrine. They may not embrace Christianity. But the witness of the life is strong enough that you don't have this reproach on you because you're just a complete idiot out there wandering around and bringing reproach on the cause of Christ. So 29, the image of the trap suggests that believers that pursue material blessings actually become trapped in their own chosen lifestyle. And I would change this last point to just read the last part of this, to read that this fits the form of an addiction. I can't diagnose addictions. I'm not a doctor. But all the forms of an addiction, it's a pleasurable experience. You repeat it over and over again. It yields very consistent results. But it also has the law of diminishing returns, as addictions do. I remember when I was, an unbeliever and all of that, I stayed away from certain drugs because I could see that there were people that got addicted to those and that their life just went downhill. And then there was the law of diminishing returns, that you don't get the same pleasurable experience. The details that satisfied you yesterday won't satisfy you tomorrow. It'll have to be something more. You have to have the bigger hit, the bigger rush, and all of that. And so the deal of materialism fits the pattern of an addiction for some people. I think they actually do get addicted to this. And so while society frowns on any certain sorts of addictions, smoking, drinking, chewing, whatever else, what other addictions you may have, they frown on all this. They don't frown on material addictions. They in fact applaud those and encourage them. So 30, as Dr. Leslie German has observed, and Dr. Leslie German is I believe she's Canadian. I know she works in Canada. She's an anthropologist. I got no reason to believe this woman's a believer at all. She's not coming at this from a Christian point perspective per se. But this is something even some unbeliever in the cosmos could see, that it's this obvious. There is a trap built into our culture, or any culture, of conspicuous consumerism. The more you consume, the more you are pressed to consume. The fact is that whatever momentary satisfaction the acquisition and possession of things brings to the materialist is always fleeting. Thus, people are driven further and further down the material path of seeking nirvana around the next corner at the mall, and or Old Navy, or wherever. Where is my next fix? My next material fix. I got to have one this week. I've got to buy something. And again, this was out of an article, Great Temptations, The Trap of Materialism and How to Escape. And again, I have no reason to believe that she's coming at this from a Christian perspective at all. It's my opinion that, but even unbelievers can see this, that this is this obvious. And if it's this obvious that they can see it, why can't believers see it under the ministry of God, the Holy Spirit? And the Word of God. Well, they don't want to. It's just finally that simple, isn't it? Well, 31 here, the third item that Paul indicates will become the lot of those that indulge the mental attitude sin of materialism. That is denoted by the Greek noun epithumia, subject-verb agreement. 32, the term is used in a neutral sense to denote any desire. For instance, it's used that way in Philippians 1:23. And again, in some cases, there's no even suggestion that it's wrong or inappropriate. Philippians 1:23. And in this case, clearly we would say it's a legitimate desire. I am hard pressed. Paul, this was during the time of the first Roman imprisonment, by the way. And if you read carefully Philippians and you study this book, it becomes apparent that Paul knew he was going to be released, that was becoming clear to him, that this was not going to result in anything, that ultimately he would be released and restored to the Philippians. But he didn't mind the idea of dying and going to heaven either. That didn't bother him. Because to him, to live is Christ and to die is gain. And verse 22, or verse, let's see, which one are we looking at here? Verse 23, I am hard pressed from both directions, having the desire to depart and be with Christ, for that is very much better. Yet to remain on in the flesh is more necessary for your sake, and convinced of this, I know that I shall remain and continue. Paul had figured out that this was not going to result in his death, that his Roman imprisonment was temporary. It's also used in 1 Thessalonians 2:17 of a bona fide desire. But we, brothers, having been bereft of you for a short while, in person but not in heart. They translated the word spirit here, but it's actually the word heart. And he told the Thessalonians, you're in our hearts. We're all the more eager with great desire to see your face. And so it's a bona fide desire to get together with positive believers. And in Paul's case, to teach them, to encourage them, to do what they needed. And he had been run out of town, essentially, at night on a rail. So it's used to denote any desire, but is most often used in the New Testament to denote a desire, craving, or lust for that which is not appropriate. Romans 7:8. Here, dealing with the way the sin nature operates, and it even uses the law of God against us. You got to love the sin nature. I mean, this thing is so corrupt. The wages of the sin nature is death. It pays a real high price, too, for if you obey it and fall into it. But the sin nature, verse 8, and that's another reason I wanted to do Romans. I'm still torn with this, because I really would like to get through this and get all this stuff lined out clearly on the sin nature. But the sin nature taking opportunity through the commandment. It's viewed as sitting there kind of waiting and just wanting to pounce. Okay. The commandment. Produced in me coveting of every kind. Because the law said, you shall not covet. Now what is, and we know this about human nature at some level. What is the quickest way to get somebody to do something? Tell them not to. And you'll see people that will snap, man, they'll do just the opposite because you told them not to do it. And so the law is standing there saying, don't do this, don't do this, don't do this, don't do this, don't do this. It gives you no power not to do it. It just makes demands on you. And as one guy said, do this and live, the law commands, but gives me neither feet nor hands. So it doesn't provide you any way to obey God. It just says, obey God, don't do this, don't do this, don't do this. So, but the sin nature taking opportunity through the commandment produced in me coveting of every kind. For apart from the law, the sin nature is inoperative. That it uses the law as a tool in order to gain access to the believer and to begin to rule over him. And if you watch people, you'll see it. You know, if there's a little sign that says stay off the grass, you'll see people that will walk on the grass. Just because the sign there says don't do it. So again, that is illicit craving there, coveting or lusting. 1 John 2:16 also. For all that is in the world. And here again, the word cosmos is used a couple of ways too. It's also used in a neutral sense, but here it's used in a negative sense. The organized structure out there apart from God. The things that people pursue, all of that. All that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, and the lust of the eyes, and the boastful pride of life, is not from the Father. It's from the world. This doesn't come from God. And so here you have fleshly lusts, lusts that originate through the sin nature, just by itself. Lusts that get through the eye gate. That would include probably sexual lust and materialism lust and things that you see that you think, oh, I need that, or I want that, or you perform some illicit activity. Also, Jude 16 and 18. These are grumblers, finding fault, following after their own lusts. they're just doing, they make up the rules as they go, and they do it their own way, and, and this is the way some people operate. They speak arrogantly, flattering people for the sake of gaining an advantage. In verse 18, and that they were saying to you, in the last times there shall be mockers, following after their own ungodly lusts. These are ones who cause divisions, worldly-minded, devoid of the Spirit. That translation is questionable. It's the Greek term psychikos, and it means soulless or functioning more out of their soul. I don't know that I would say that this means that they're functioning as natural men, as it were. So I don't know that this would rule out believers in this, but I haven't done the book, so I will beg, you know, mercy on that one. I'd have to go do the whole context here. But this certainly qualifies as some believers I know. So they're focused on this world. 33, various mental attitude lusts that come into play that might otherwise have been suppressed had the believer not chosen to cater to his materialism lust. 34, when a man desires to obtain wealth and material prosperity, he might become involved in a politics, recognizing that those with the most political power often prosper in the financial realm. And let's face it, this is a form of arrogance as well. Maybe they say they're doing it for altruistic reasons. Oh, I just want to clean up the world and make it a better place. When deep down, you know, what they want is free haircuts, free health insurance, and money and power. Now, so they could be lying about that. But and also then once you get into the financial realm, you can pass laws that are amenable to you. You can pass laws that are amenable to your buddies. You can throw government contracts to, say, Halliburton and anybody else. So these types of things, you know, happen. And it may simply be out of materialism. It may not be. It may be other factors that can get into it. But certainly people have done this for money. You know, you all hear about all these bribes and kickbacks and various things. If you're not in it for the money, why are you taking that? Well, you're in it for the money. B, crime, recognizing that there is plenty of wealth to be had if one operates outside the boundaries of the law. Any form of crime, you know, I think being a hitman probably pays pretty good. But is that really what you want to do? And there's all types of crimes out there with which one could get engaged. Certainly dealing drugs, there's a lot of money to be made in that. Various crimes related to anything. If you want to operate outside the boundaries of the law and society, you can get ahead. There is some wealth to be had out there. See evil associations, recognizing that certain people have connections that can be a source of profit if exploited properly. We'll just call it networking. But just, you know, we don't care how evil the person is as long as they throw business my way. And that's inappropriate. That's not what you really want. And that's one way to get wealth, though, that's for sure. D, evils related to peer pressure. Those that are looking to gain wealth often find themselves in a social stratum composed of people that they now have to seek to impress. And so then they may be tempted to compromise doctrine because of that. Well, I can't continue to hang out with these people, these, you know, rich muckety mucks up here, because, you know, none of them are interested in doctrine, and many of them are actually antagonistic to God. And so I have to compromise and all of that. So I, you know, the subject of Christianity might come up. Well, you have to sit there and play dumb in order to maintain your status with these people. And if you have to do that, that's illicit compromise. That's inappropriate. E, violating MPR, your most pressing responsibility, which is spiritual growth, which is glorifying God, skipping Bible class or omitting certain applications in order to pursue a greater level of prosperity. F, sexual compromise, recognizing that immorality, deviance, and pornography are very lucrative in today's world. The market is extensive, and people can do all types of things, again, to make money, if that's really what they're all about. Okay, time's up. We'll stop there and continue on here Wednesday at 7:30. Thank you, Father, for the privilege of assembling together. Thank you for the Bible doctrine that we so desperately need. And thank you for the encouragement we have from those who are like-minded in the truth, for we ask it in Christ's name. Amen.